everyone, and welcome back to the Middle Age Gamer podcast. Today's lads are going to pick their brains with a favorite puzzle game, Professor Layton, Shrine, and the Surgeon's Door. Come and talk to us about your favorite puzzle game on our Facebook and YouTube page or at middleagegaming2020@gmail.com. Have a good show!
Hello everyone out there in internet land, and welcome back to Middle Age Gaming! Before we begin, I would just like to give you a quick reminder to subscribe and set your notifications, whatever those may be, a bell or anything, because, quite frankly, we do this show as much for you as we do for ourselves. And with that business out of the way, it's time for pleasure. So, Phil, would you like to fill us in on today's topic?
After much discussion, we managed to settle down on the topic of puzzle games and brain teasers. These guys wanted to... What did you want to do specifically? Something that I'd never even played before or heard of
point
before?
Point and click was Antoine's suggestion.
Yes, there we go. And that scared me because I didn't really know what these guys were talking about. And then we decided to open up the genre a little bit so that I could include games that I knew of. Puzzle games, something that gets your brain going when you're playing the game. Antoine, are you going to start us off with your brainy game?
Absolutely. Just notice that each time I give a suggestion, previously was Zelda, he doesn't know about it. Point and click, he doesn't know about it. Okay. At some point, I'll have to put all of my topic on a sheet and you choose the stuff.
He knows Final Fantasy, so.
He does.
That's the only thing that matters.
Exactly. And Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, Ghost of Tsushima, right.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm going to start. And on the topic of brain teasers, I'm going to go with a classic, which is Professor Layton. In particular with 1 and 2, which were The Curious Village and The Diabolical Box. And don't ask me to repeat this one again, because it's super hard to say in English. I don't know why. And it's very... When I say classic, it's because it was released on DS in 2007, Japan, and 2008 for the PAL region, so Europe, and for me, PAL, yay. That's quite old, but that was really cool. There has been a total of 8 games, I believe, so the original 3, which were actually re-released in HD in 2020. And I actually found while writing the script that I can actually have it in Android and iPhone. So I'm going to very likely buy one. I believe that the first two are like $13, and maybe the third one, the only one I didn't do, is $21. On iPhone, it's fine, because it's not the kind of game which is super... like doesn't have super big graphics and stuff. It's really like brain teasing. So you can play it on every screen. I hate playing on mobiles. That's why I'm saying that this kind of game, it's fine. It's just, you know, like brain teasing. So I'm okay with it. This Professor Layton one has been hugely popular. Just it's a little game on DS, a puzzle solving game. This stuff has anime series, an anime movie, a novel, I'm forgetting stuff. anyway, it's been adapted everywhere. It is even have a crossover with Ace Attorney, you know, like the lawyer game.
Yeah, so, Phoenix Wright, right?
Phoenix Wright, absolutely. So this series has been hugely successful, and it's actually quite simple in its principle. You have a little story, and like... Mainly, I remember the first game, but in the first game, you have this village with the villagers liking brain teasers for a good reason, because there was a rich old guy who left a treasure in the village, and you are here investigating with Professor Layton and his apprentice, Luke, and you have to answer some riddles to pursue your adventure. If the puzzle is too hard for you, you can have some hint with hint coins, but these ones are limited, so you really need to look around the village for weird objects or something like this to pick them up and collect them. You can restart puzzles as many times as you want. Just if you succeed in the first try, you get some in-game currency. Honestly, I can't recall exactly what it does, but there are many games. The even mini games in it, like when you solve some puzzles, they give you some objects which allows you to decorate Professor Layton's room, or It's going to allow you to, if you collect some gizmos, you can have a robot dog which is going to help you sniff out, you know, the coins, the hint coins or things like this. And if you do every mini games, it gives you some bonus for some extra puzzles. And I think it also, if you connect to the Nintendo Wi-Fi online, you also have an extra 10 or 15 or 20 puzzles or something like this. So if you like to, you know, rack your brain, you are served with this series. Not only there's 8 games, each games have more than 100, 130 puzzles. It's massive and it's really fun. And I recall the stories were really cool as well. So I don't know, do any of you, did you play this? Or did you have a DS at the time, actually?
I've never had a DS. Yeah, so
because we know Nintendo don't do cross-platform, so.
Yeah, I've never had a DS, so I've never had the opportunity to play a Professor Layton game. So how do the puzzles work? I mean, is this like Carmen Sandiego type thing where you're going through finding clues, or is it more like individual puzzles, or
it's individual puzzles. Each puzzle is could be mat game, you know, like this you have two shores and you have to take the boat from one side to the other, and how many people can go, blah blah blah, or you have this, or you have to, you know, that's the game with the 8 mistake in a picture. You have to put around, because, you know, it was on DS, so you have the stylet, and so it was very interactive. So plenty of different type of puzzles.
So the storyline and the puzzles are separate then? Like how do they integrate together?
You can't progress the storyline without doing the puzzles.
You can do random puzzles, any puzzles in any order, or specific to as you progress?
Well, you're going to be blocked if you don't do some puzzles. So it's a village. You can go and see, in the first one, of course, you can go and see any NPCs, which happens to be robots, actually, to ask for their puzzles, and they will unlock a new part of the village for you each time, and that's how you progress. But you can, if you don't like one puzzle, you can go to solve another one and come back to this one later.
Okay, so when you get into the game, you, like, say there's 600 puzzles or whatever, there's all 600 puzzles available, and you can kind of like pick which ones you go to, and you complete a certain amount, and then your storyline progresses. Is that how it works?
Not that I recall. It has been a long time since I played it, but from what I recall, there's more like optional quests and mandatory ones. Like, there is some that you need to solve with a specific character to continue the story, and some which are completely optional and they are just here for the minigames.
And do you play it just because you can change to one of the 70 different outfit styles? Is that what you play for, the glam options?
The waifu feature.
That must have been in the later game. There wasn't such a feature in the DS one. Like the one you have on screen, for instance, it's...
That's the newest one,
because how it goes is that number 1, 2, 3 is Professor Layton and his assistant. The 3 games after that is actually a prequel, so still the 2 guys, but much younger. And after that, it's actually the kids. This girl, I don't recall this girl, but...
It's his daughter. I spent all last night listening to like a girl go 2 hours on the history of Professor Layton.
Very courageous. So, but you don't need a Nintendo for that. It's very rare. It's really rare enough to say it. Even I was surprised when I see, I can check. And sorry, come on, she's always here. So yeah, so I saw that and I was like, come on, a Nintendo game which is not a Nintendo. Wow, I must jump on it. But since it's quite well designed for actually mobile game, why not?
Why not?
And in terms of success, like if you follow Metacritic scores, nearly all of them are over 80%. I think just 1 or 2 are under this bar and they are still at 75 or 78. So they're all good games. You can't really go wrong with it.
So would you say that, like what is the age level that we're looking at for these kinds of games? I mean, looking at the art style, it looks like it could be for a pretty young audience. Would you say that this is something that is, say, good for elementary school kids even? Like maybe like, you know, third graders or so? Or would you say this is actually, the puzzles themselves are probably a little bit more difficult that maybe you should like more of a teenager, adult kind of thing?
I let my eldest play it. He's 9 years old, and I would let him play. I'm pretty sure he would be fine with it.
Okay, of so course it wouldn't be like too difficult for him.
No, and of course there are some puzzles which are more complicated, but again, they are not all compulsory. You know, if he follows the main quest, the main line, pretty sure he would be able to solve it.
Mm. And looking at all the different trailers, I have a different trailer up now. You guys can't see it, unfortunately, but I just popped up the one for the game specifically Antoine was referencing. So it seems like there's quite a bit of video in there. What would you say is the, like, say, game to anime ratio here in terms of, like, are you mostly watching it or are you mostly playing and they just throw the video sequences up on the trailers?
So the one you're showing, maybe one of the latest, the trailer I'm seeing on the Switch right now was one of the latest. So I have honestly no clue. There was no anime part on the first two. On the DS, it was just like very much like Ace Attorney. You know, just a guy with some lines and you just pass. And it was like, I don't know, like 70% story to 30% game. Mm. Blah, 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 puzzle, blah, 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 puzzle. That's it. But there was no cinematics per se, really, like just an introduction, maybe a couple of scenes, but that's it.
Okay, because yeah, even looking through a lot of the, like, when I was looking for trailers and stuff, there's most of it seemed to be just video, but I know that there's an anime that goes along with it, and so I
again,
wasn't
yes.
sure
how animes
much...
movies
yeah and it seems like a lot level. Of the movies in the anime rehash some of the same territory as the games,
possibly, like, but I haven't played all eight of them, and the two I played, honestly, the story is long gone from my mind.
Okay, have you seen the show or the movies or
no? Okay. I haven't, honestly. Most of it I realized just by you know, like writing the script. Oh, there was a movie, didn't even knew.
Yeah. So, because I was looking at, like I said, I was looking at it last night, and they were saying that sometimes there are things in the movie that aren't in the game. Like, maybe they explain things a little bit better for certain things because maybe in the game they realized that, oh, maybe we should have explained this a little bit better. Like, this character should have had a little bit more backstory. So when they did the anime, maybe they added a few scenes. But at the same time, a game is clearly going to be longer, and therefore some things had to be cut. So it's kind of if you watch one or the other, you'll get a full story, but if you want the full story, it's kind of better to do both, from what I've heard.
Yeah, 8 gamer, that's quite a lot of story.
And for Phil, these are all in the same universe in a chronological order, so you don't have to worry about all that time skipping and alternate realities, so
yeah, that's a very simple one.
yeah, apparently there's the whole thing with his daughters and him getting older and stuff like that. Yeah,
on that point, so I would recommend for everyone really to play it. It's very nice, you know, like before you go to sleep, you know, a couple of brain teasers, that's nice for kids. I think it's very interesting. Maybe I'm gonna put my kids to it, you know, so they actually have a reason to go on the tablet and play. I know that at least it's educational.
How long would you say these games typically are?
Oh, it wasn't that long. Yeah, I remember it wasn't that long. Depending if you're a completionist or not, of course, as usual. But
okay,
like this, I'd say 10, 15 hours. I might say something completely wrong, but come on, 2008—that's ages ago.
All right, Phil. Any other comments, or you want to start getting into your stuff?
Nothing really to add. Not really much to add.
So are you guys going to buy it on Android or something, or take a look?
Nope. I don't know if it's on Android. Like I said, I was when I was watching reviews last night, they said it was on iOS, and they said themselves they weren't sure if it was on Android. Is it on Android?
From what I read, yes.
Okay, I would assume so. Most things are available on both. maybe. I would do is, for me personally, I'd probably want to watch the show first and see if I can get invested in the world and the characters. And then once I get invested in the world and the characters, then maybe I'd pick up a game. Because point and click, like when I was younger, I used to like it, but we didn't have too many other options. But now I've kind of moved away from it. I still enjoy them sometimes, but, you know, with all the backlog and everything.
Yeah, but don't tell me you wouldn't redo maybe a little Monkey Island 3.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't mind something like that. Yeah, I would check it out maybe on mobile, because that's the kind of thing you can do, like, say, if you have a 10-minute break, you can just pop something
out. Yeah, on commute or stuff like this, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'd definitely take a look at it. See which ones they have.
It's definitely the game. The missus would prefer it more than I would, so I don't know. I'd have to ask her. She might already have played it, though, because she's a big Nintendo fan. She did have DS and all the stuff all the way back to all the different versions of the Game Boys and everything. So
she knows. I'm sure of it.
All right, then I guess we're moving on for Phil. So, Phil, how would you like to introduce your game?
Ba-da! It's time! There we go. It works really good. I wasn't sure. Now I'm going to be made the same mistake that I think Antoine made a while ago, where you cite a game and then the trailer ends up being for the different game that you're talking about. I've got a feeling this might be Trine 4.
This is Trine 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I haven't played Trine 4.
Which one did you play? I'll switch the trailers real quick.
Trine 1 and Trine 2 are the ones I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to be discussing Trine 3 and why it's supposed to be terrible. And Trine 4 is supposed to be not too bad. But anyway, let's go in order, and I will explain to them, explain to whoever's listening what is going on. So it's developed by Frostbite, Trine Games. This was an evolution for the group that I played with. We played Diablo, and everyone was getting a little bit bored, and I could play Diablo forever, but they were getting a bit tired of the seasons doing the same stuff, so we progressed on to Nine Parchments, and then we played that for a while, and then people getting a little bored of that, so Trine was the next one that we moved on to, because it was super cheap. I don't know if for Taiwanese people, if you're on the Switch, they don't have a Taiwanese store, so you're encouraged to switch between other stores, and there's a really cool app where it'll tell you every single price of the game and exactly where the cheapest version is. So you can end up getting these games for like $2, $3 and stuff like that. So we managed to find the Trine series. I said, let's give it a shot. It's got some good reviews, and we tried the first Trine. It's pretty exciting. Side-scrolling, action, platform, puzzle, everything else. And the first one was Couch Co-op, and it's three characters, the Trine, the Holy Trinity. You've got a warrior, a wizard, and a ranger. We don't have a healer, never mind. A warrior, wizard, a ranger, and each one has different skills and abilities. So the warrior can run around and punch things and has like a shield bash. Not particularly super exciting in the earlier stuff. The wizard, especially in the early ones, which was completely overpowered, could create wooden blocks. They could create wooden planks. They could create floating wooden triangles. And then you have the ranger, who can do ranged combat and can also use, they can shoot and then sling around. Like a
grapple?
Yeah, grappling hook. Yeah, there we go. That's the one. So they can use a grappling hook, and it's quite intricate and fidgety to be able to perfect the swinging patterns, and then to jump, and then to sort of like somersault over to where you need to be. And of course, if you miss the tiny platforms, then you usually fall down to your death. As a one player, you switch between the three characters as you're walking through the dungeon, and you can switch depending. The game changes depending which one you've got. Or some of the puzzles, there are multiple ways around working it out. But say you're playing the warrior and you get to a puzzle, he's not particularly very good, so you're going to need to change to one of the other two to complete the puzzle area. If you're playing two-player, then you switch between two of the three, and then three-player, obviously everybody's set one of the characters. And you need that mix to get through things. There's boss fights at the end of each levels, some random monsters between, spawns of rubbish. But then you come to these sections where they are puzzles, and you've got to work together to resolve them, however you may need to be. And the first one that really depended upon the wizard. He was the main one. And as you progress and you level up with your character, you can unlock powers from the tree. So when you start off with a wizard, you can only make the boxes. But then as you progress down, you can spend your points, you might be able to make two boxes or three boxes. And then you could unlock making planks or two planks or three planks, or you can then eventually unlock making the triangle that you can kind of like click and move. So one of the other characters can jump onto it, and then you can kind of like, you know, slam them up to where they need to be and they can jump off. So the levels progress in difficulty, but then you can go back, and then maybe there's certain things hidden on the earlier levels that you couldn't get to because you didn't have the powers and the abilities unlocked at that stage to get the special bonus gear. And it's kind of funky. It's fun. I tend to play the ranger. I kind of like the fidgety, jumpy around mechanics. The missus usually played the wizard, and she'll just sit there for like about 20 minutes slowly trying to put these panels of blocks into some pattern of some pyramid table, and then saying, oh, doesn't it look very nice? And then I just like shoot my grappling hook and just fly over it and get over where I need to be anyway. But yeah, you can play it different ways. It's designed, the levels are designed, so you can resolve most of the puzzles in different ways. So Trine was 2009, 80% Metacritic. Then they released the second one, which is on the screen now. Very, very similar. Pretty much everybody agrees Trine 2 is the best of the bunch. You don't need to play them in order. There isn't a story that follows through. So if you want to try it and you just want to play the best, then just go straight into Trine 2. 84 to 87 on Metacritic. Then you could play it online. And the puzzles were better. Gameplay was better. Everything kind of came to perfection in the puzzles were difficult, but it was mixed with skills. They got rid of items, and instead you had different mechanics of what you unlocked from chests to unlock, have additional powers and abilities. But it was definitely the best. Trine 3, I never got, and we stopped at Trine 2 because it had terrible reviews. They said it was only half a game. The developers robbed everybody. It's got like 64% on Metacritic, 2015. And a lot of people said it was Trine 3.1, and they never came back and finished the story. It actually ends on a cliffhanger, which is pretty bad, for a game. Trine 4... I'm interested in, I want to finish Trine 2, and then I will consider getting Trine 4. It's 80% on Metacritic, 2019. IGN said it's comparable to Trine 2. It's not quite the best in the series due to, and quote, they said, lackluster puzzles, not the difficulty and technical issues. So it did make me worry, but then they also gave it a really high rating and said it's one of the best co-op games there are, so... it did make me, eyebrows raised. How can it be that good? And then you cite three pretty big issues that I would imagine in a puzzle game. You'd want it to be difficult, have interesting puzzles, and not have technical issues. But there we go. I will probably get it and give it a shot, and we'll see. I mean, have you guys tried any of the Trine series?
Antoine?
I haven't, but I have been watching many streams because Trine 4 is not that old, right? There was a few streamers who played co-op on it, and it was very funny and very nice. And I really like all the graphics, the level designs were really nice. The characters are, you know, like the punchline were pretty good, so very, very cute, nice characters. I wouldn't play it because you said it's co-op. I don't think it's solo player. It's pure co-op, right?
No, you can play it co-op. You can play it solo. You can switch between the three classes.
All right. But it's really fun if you play with other people.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen anyone playing solo, so I would imagine it's a bit lackluster, as you would say. So I just have a very good feeling.
It might not be a bad game with your son. 9, you probably would be about the right age to get it.
Fair enough. It's which platform, like Nintendo?
Pretty much everything.
Everything?
Yeah, let me just check for Trine 4. Trine 4 released on Windows, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and Stadia.
All right. Fair enough. But maybe that's actually something worth considering because from what I saw from the streams, it looks pretty fun.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Trine 2 because it was free on PlayStation Plus once, and I played, I think, maybe the first level or two levels or something like that. I didn't get very far, but yeah, I was playing solo play, and yeah, it was all right, but it's just one of those things where I don't remember what game I was waiting for, but I was waiting for something and I needed something to kill like time, and I just hadn't finished it. You know, I had played it for like a week, and then it was like, oh, nope, now the game I'm waiting for is out, so sorry, try and go off to the side. And then, yeah, never went back. I theoretically could, though. But yeah, I played it single player, and going through with the, was it swapping between the two characters? It wasn't that bad, but I just wonder, could the fact that they said maybe the puzzles were too easy, could that be somewhat as a result of having multiple people? Like, for instance, if you're playing single player, you know, you kind of have to move between the different characters. But if you're doing co-op, you know, everybody can just kind of focus on their own thing and you can do things simultaneously. You don't have to do things one at a time. So do you think maybe does it get easier on co-op?
Yeah, some of them were level changes. So some of them, if you're playing on your own, the level is slightly different from how the level will be if there's a group, because you can only play one character.
Okay.
So there is an adjustment.
All right. And I was looking at the trailer for Trine 4, and it looked like I could see four people on the screen, but it looked like you could actually have multiple people of a certain class. You know,
not sure. I've not played. I've just said fourth installment Trine series, return of the series, three protagonist, medieval fantasy location. So it doesn't mention a fourth.
Okay, because in the trailers there were four people, but it looked at times it looked like there were four rangers or even four warriors. So it looked like you could actually double up on classes or even quadruple up on classes. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but. It looked like that's what they were doing.
If multiple wizards would just be broken as hell. You'd just have, you know, boxes everywhere. You'd just be able to walk from this side to this side just on a layer of boxes, no matter what the puzzle is.
Yeah, I don't know how it works. I haven't played it. I just saw the trailer.
Yeah, each were kind of like, if you were doing it solo, the wizard was the one that would be able to resolve the puzzles the easiest. The ranger was okay, but also was okay at combat, so you could kind of get through without having to switch around as much. And so you kind of really played it as the ranger and played most of the game as the ranger, switching if you desperately needed to, or you played the warrior wizard and then you switch between those two depending on whether you need to punch some stuff, get through stuff, or go back to the puzzle. Seemed to be like people would side with one or the other. But it's definitely fun as three players. Really, really funny, because it's just this madness, because even just a couch co-op, I was playing the ranger and the missus was playing the wizard, and just I'm running around bouncing all over the place and she's trying to put boxes and I'm knocking the boxes flying everywhere. So you end up, you know, online is even worse, because you just can't slap the person next to you and say, stop it. You know, you've got to try and cooperate online while everyone's flying all over the place doing crazy stuff.
All right. Yeah. And it looks like, I mean, even here that you can see the warrior kind of using his shield as a platform for other characters to jump on. So it looks like there is like a lot of synergy between the classes as well. Not just purely everybody's good at one thing, but they can actually work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I say, two and I'm going to guess four as much have those puzzles where if you're playing co-op, then you have to work together. You there's no way of just one person resolving that puzzle. You know, you really, you need both. And that can be difficult again, like I said, because like Trine 1, you had like the wizard moving the triangle blocks and you could grapple onto it. And then you're grappling and you're trying to grapple onto this piece as the wizard's moving it around. And, you know, everyone's going all over the place. And obviously the ranger's shouting to the wizard, move me to this place. And the wizard's saying, well, you need to swing properly and, you know, just laying blame on everybody else. It's a bit mad.
All right. And is it limited to three people or
yes.
Are the previous ones? Okay.
Yeah,
so the
yeah,
fourth
yeah.
one may not be, but the previous ones definitely were.
It was a precursor for this three-person fire team.
Holy Trinity.
Trine is to blame.
How old is Trine?
2009.
Okay.
So what's that? 12 years. Sheesh. It played pretty well. Trine, because we came to Trine late again. We were only playing Trine. We downloaded it last year, and it was like 40 NT dollars or something, like just over one US dollar or something. It was crazy cheap, and we thought it was pretty good bang for your buck. And it had aged reasonably well for what it is. You know, sometimes you can really tell that a game is 12 years old, but actually it was pretty solid compared to Trine 2, also 2011. I'd have to play Trine 4 to see how much they've evolved the gameplay.
And for the original, is that so that should have been what, 360 and PS3? Or was that PS4 and Xbox One?
Good question. I'm not sure. I got mine from the Switch store.
Okay.
Trine originally was I'm not sure, it doesn't say. It says what it's available from now.
Well, it just popped up on the trailer. It said Trine 2. It said it was available on the 360. I know it's also available on the PS4. But yeah, they just there it said 360. So I don't know if you're on Xbox, Windows. You should be able to play all four. But I guess if you're on PlayStation, I don't know if the original one is.
Yeah, the Windows 2009, the PlayStation Network version was to be released, but last minute bugs caused a delay. It was released. Oh, still 2009.
Just later.
Yeah. Just a couple of months later.
All right. Well, Antoine, you have any other comments?
No, I'm good.
He's good. All right.
It's a good game. If you've got kids, maybe about 10 and a bit older, I think below that they're a bit too young. But from above that, it is the type of game that gets is fun, I'd imagine.
I'll put that on my wish list maybe for Trine 5.
Or just get Trine 1 for super cheap. Probably get it for like $2 or something.
Play it on a Steam Deck or something. All right. Well, then we will move on to my game, The 13th Doll, which is a little more indie than, I mean, I'm sure Trine's pretty indie anyway, but this one's probably a little more obscure. So The 13th Doll is the second sequel to the original game, The Seventh Guest, which was released in, I don't even remember, a long time ago. 1993. So the original game came out in 1993. This was actually it was one of the killer apps kind of things, or, you know, the system sellers of the CD drive. So that's how old it is. When CD drives first came to PCs, this game came out, or the original game, Seventh Guest, came out, and kind of set the standard for this is what CD games will be able to do. And it was two discs, and it was pretty amazing for its time. It doesn't quite hold up anymore. It is kind of, you know, the animations are kind of janky and whatnot. But anyway, the original game follows the story of, there was this guy, his name was Stoff. He was a criminal, you know, he robbed a couple grocery stores and gas stations, and that was about it, until one day where he murders a woman for her purse. That night he has a vision of a doll. He then carves the doll, goes into town, sells it, and ends up being popular. And he ends up having another vision for another toy, makes that toy, creates this huge toy kind of, you know, franchise or whatever, becomes super rich, and then has one final vision of creating this messed up house. And that's what he does. And you, the main character, wake up in the house after an incident, and you're not quite sure what happened or why you're there, but you can see ghosts in the house, basically. So you can see ghosts of the past. You can see what happened to these six individuals who one time went to this guy's house. And then you need to figure out, you know, what happened to these people and everything. So it's a point and click adventure. You go through the house, you come up to a puzzle, you solve the puzzle, you get a little bit more story, you progress to a different part of the house, same thing, that sort of thing. And the puzzles are really kind of all over the place. So there's a lot of variety in the kind of puzzles you're going to solve. Some of them are going to be like, one of them is, you have to fit, I think it's nine bishops or nine queen, or no, I think it's like eight bishops on a chessboard in such a way that they can't kill each other. Other puzzles would be like maybe rotating a clock so that it sets a certain time or something, or, you know, getting, you know, Twisting Bones or something to kind of create like a, one of those old pipe dream type games, or navigating a labyrinth in the basement. So you have all these puzzles that you have to do to get the story, and you move through and kind of see what happens. The first game was very successful. It was very highly rated. The second game, not as highly rated. The guy who created the first game created a third game, but from what I saw, it only sold 20-something copies in North America. So, I mean, that obviously is a tremendous failure. But then the game franchise kind of died. Well, come the 2000s, and I guess it was around maybe 2014, 15, around then or so, and a group of people that really, really enjoyed the original game wanted to create a proper sequel. And so they got together, they kickstarted it, and, you know, they all wanted to, they all make, came together and they made this game, and they did it very much in the style of the original game. So they went through the old maps, they built the house basically the same way. They did kind of the cheesy green screen over the CG backgrounds. So they really leaned into kind of the camp of the original game, and they wanted to make it as, you know, accurate to that feel as possible. Other than that, it's basically almost exactly the same. The story is obviously an updated version. You're playing, I think, something like 20 years after the initial incident, and you're back in the house, and, you know, you have to figure out what's going on again. Something is, you know, it's somehow tied to this 13th doll, you know, because Staff was making these dolls. Oh, and the dolls, of course, were making children sick, so the children were dying. So he had some sort of demonic pact going on there. But yeah, you're trying to figure out the mystery of these dolls, and they've for the most part, they allow you to play the same way you played the original. You know, you click on a corridor, the camera moves down the corridor. You click to the left, the camera shifts to the left. So you can do that, but they've also allowed it that you can have full 3D motion in the mansion as well, now that we have, you know, better graphics and all these things have been updated. So you can either kind of play it in a newer way where you can fully explore it, or you can play it in the older way with kind of the pre-rendered movement and you just kind of look around the room. But yeah, other than that, it's very similar, I guess, to Professor Layton in terms of the way puzzles are, like, as you know, there's a high, large variety of different kinds of puzzles, you know, maybe stacking things or trying to get things of equal weight or something like that. But also it's relatively cheap. It's on Steam. It's gotten really good reviews. The reviews have been mostly positive, I guess. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely worth checking out, and it's relatively cheap. So,
question: When did you say was the original game?
The original was 1993.
I was thinking that Capcom saw that and say, "Let's make it an action game, put zombies in it, and call it Resident Evil."
Oh, okay, I was thinking House of the Dead, but similar idea. Yeah. No, well, it does.
At first, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw the trailer and I got a bit scared because it really looked like Myst.
Well, actually, really hard. Yeah, no, that's the thing is Myst was another one of those games that was the early sellers of the CD-ROM. And so I think it was Seventh Guest, Myst, and there was a third one, and I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. But this has a lot in common with Myst. If you enjoyed the original Myst, you're probably going to enjoy this. And it's similar to Myst in that games now really spell things out for you and just what you need to do. And older games did not. And so there are a lot of times where in the original game, if you might not even know what you're supposed to do for the puzzle, let alone how to solve it. For instance, I think one of the last puzzles in the original is there's a model house and you have to click on windows. And as you click on the windows, they'll light up in sequence, but you have to figure out what sequence you need to click on them to get them to light up in the right sequence. And then you move on to the next tier of the house, but they don't tell you exactly what clicking on a window, how that's going to affect the other windows. And they don't exactly tell you what windows need to be turned on. So you're just kind of like, I'm just going to click randomly for the next half hour until it works out.
Yeah, very Myst like then.
Yeah. Myst was like that too, where I remember there was one part where you have to get a combination to open a door, and
it's very complex.
Yeah, and you could go through and you could find the combination, but you'd find like one number at a time, and then you had to figure out and then you had to figure out what sequence they were in, you know, and it was one of those things where they were scattered all over the island, and it was actually literally just faster to sit there and just try every possible combination until it worked. That was actually the faster solution.
Please remind our younger audience that at the time, you couldn't just go on Google walkthrough of Myst or walkthrough of 13th Doors. No, you couldn't. There was no play walkthrough or anything like this. You're on your own.
Unless you had some kind of like GamePro magazine or something like that. Yeah, I mean, I remember they would release books and you could go to the library or, you know, they would have these books and it would just have cheat codes or solutions to certain puzzles. And you would just have to look through, you know, index cards to figure out which one.
Half of them wouldn't work.
Yeah, because, well, for you, it'd work for me because we were in the North American region. And they were designed for us. But one thing the seventh guest did, I don't know if the 13th doll does this, but the seventh guest had a thing where in the library, there was a library in the house. And if you go there, you click on a certain book and they'll give you a hint as to how to solve the next puzzle. And if you click on it again, it'll give you another hint.
Okay.
And if you click on it a third time, what it'll do is it'll solve the puzzle for you, but it will not play the video sequence or the movie sequence afterwards. So you miss that part of the story. So you can progress, but you're going to be missing out on things. So I don't know if the 13th doll has that feature or not. But yeah, everything else is pretty much spot on. The house is basically the same. It's got the really kind of early 90s 3D graphics, kind of, you know, pre-Toy Story, badly rendered, almost no textures on anything kind of thing. And even the little skeletal hand, you know, doing the, you know, come hither, you know, telling you can go down that hallway or no, you know, you can't click here. You know, they just, everything is spot on. So if you were a fan of the original, definitely give it a look. If you were not a fan of the original, still worth maybe watching a couple playthroughs or whatnot. However, I would say if you did not play the original, it will be hard to go back and play because not just the puzzles. I mean, you can look those up now, but just, you know, something like 10 frames per second when moving down corridors and, you know, videos being at, I don't even know how low of a resolution, maybe like 100p or something like that, you know, just very painful to watch. So definitely the new one moves a lot smoother. So, and it came out the day before Halloween, 2019. So
nice touch.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's my favorite part is just the fact that this is a fan-made game. So it is an unofficial sequel. They probably would consider it official, except I don't think the original group still exists anymore. But I just think that's really cool that a bunch of people that were really big fans of this game came together and they said, you know what, we want to make a new one. Let's write out the script. Let's hire a couple programmers to just kind of make it. Let's make it as accurate as possible. We're gonna act ourselves in it because, you know, we're not necessarily professional actors. So we still have that kind of cheesy delivery. You know, just that real over the top campiness. So very spot on as far as spiritual successors go. So Phil, any questions? You kind of have the, I don't really have anything to say face.
Yeah, man, I didn't hear about it at the time and I've not heard about it now. And the graphics do look very much like, they do remind me of like a early Doom type as you're walking down those corridors.
Early Doom.
No, it does. Like, wait, it's the one where you're just going straight down the like the wall block on both sides, just like
everything's square. Yeah,
yeah.
Everything's squared and blocked off. All right. Well, if you guys have nothing else to say, I got some news for us that we can kind of discuss and talk about. Nothing political this week, I promise. So you guys ready for some news?
Yeah, sure, shoot.
All right. So, first of all, Skyrim is back. The re-release. Crean predicted it. I mean, the day I found out, I immediately texted and I was like, Crean, you called it. And he was like, I was joking. But yes, Skyrim, the anniversary edition. This will be the seventh release of Skyrim. This will be the seventh time this game has come out. It will be released on the modern consoles, PS5 and the Xbox Series X. There are some minor updates. I think most of them are the result of frame rates. If you did get the special edition on previous gen, you can upgrade to the anniversary edition for free. So there will be some updates there in terms of maybe frame rates and whatnot. I don't think it's being graphically overhauled or anything like that. I'm pretty sure this is 100% basically the same game you played in 2011. It will release on November 11th, 2021. So exactly 10 years to the day that the original Skyrim released. And this is a bit of a controversy that I've seen on the Xbox forums, is that the anniversary edition, if you are on Xbox, you can, the special edition is on Game Pass. So you can get the special edition, you know, for free. You're paying for Game Pass, but the game is free. So you can get special edition and you get all the upgrades that come with special edition. However, the anniversary edition, there are two versions of it. The first version the first version is just the upgraded special edition where you get, you know, some of these increases in frame rate and whatnot, but you also get, I think it's three pieces of creator content. So in the original Skyrim, when it came out for the PS4 and the Xbox One, they had the Creators Club where modders could create their own content, put it up there, and then when people would have to buy that content, it wouldn't be free, but they would buy the content and then the creators could get, I guess, a bit of that money, and then Bethesda would bank the rest. So it was a lot. It was very, very poorly received. But anyway, the upgrade is going to contain three of those, and I think they're adding fishing to the game, so you're going to be able to go fishing now. So if you've ever wanted to go fishing in Skyrim, hey, it's a thing. So they're adding that. Now in the full anniversary edition, they add, I think, 500 pieces of creator content. But most of these are just going to be things like, you know, extra armors or maybe different weapon skins or things like that. So most of these are going to be very, very minor. They're not going to be big game-changing things. I think there's a few quests that are added, but again, these are side quests, and I think they're relatively small. So all that's going to be added. The controversy comes in that if you have the Xbox version on Game Pass, you get the free upgrade stuff. But any of the stuff from the anniversary edition, you have to pay for. And Skyrim is now officially a first party Xbox game. Xbox said all of their stuff is going to be free on Game Pass. So a couple Xbox people are not too happy about the fact that now they're going to have to pay for this extra content in Skyrim. And also the fact that all this content is going to be coming to the PlayStation as well. So it's not just, you know, the full anniversary, everything is coming to PlayStation. So now there's some talk that, hey, maybe not all the Bethesda stuff, but maybe at least in terms of Bethesda things we've had on PlayStation in the past, which would be Doom. Doom, Elder Scrolls, and Fallout, we might actually get those games on PlayStation moving forward, whereas new IPs might be Xbox exclusive. So this has caused a little bit of controversy. So what are your guys' thoughts on just the fact that Skyrim's coming out again? And yeah, mostly that.
Skyrim on console? I mean, just put it on your PC and go on Nexus, and you have how many mods for free do you have on the Nexus mode? How many
thousands,
different,
I would assume.
How many different fan-made quests do you have? That's ridiculous. I mean, if you never played Skyrim and you're late to the party, why not? Otherwise, I mean, I have a Skyrim edition which have been overhauled by fan-made mods like many times, and it looks super pretty, and I wouldn't get a new re-released. My stuff is so modded anyway, I wouldn't even know where to start. But on console, it was maybe great when it was released in 2011. That's it. I don't really understand. If you have it as a freebie, yeah, for your Game Pass, okay.
But then it's just mostly an upgrade. You already have the game. You're just getting some updated content.
So you will always have some people who want to have, I don't know, like at this point, it's like collector items. I don't know. But no, that's a no for me. That I just don't get it. But okay.
What about you, Phil?
I went to give it a try on the VR system. I don't know how that equates. I know the game is different. But I was Googling out of interest. Can you name other games that have spanned three generations of console, like Skyrim will have done? The same game, remastered. Doesn't count, not sequels or anything else. Or things that have been ported over, actually that have been re-released for the new console.
Tetris.
Tetris has...
Oh, dang it, that was a whine. I was going to say Tetris. Ah, crud.
Okay. I could come up with three that I... three other ones.
Grand Theft Auto?
Yep, GTA 5, because it's got the release next month on the...
And now they might even redo the... They might re-release the original trilogy. Grand Theft Auto 3, Vice City, and San Andreas. Which is where we get... You guys can't see it, but it's where we get the picture for our meme for today. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so GTA, Tetris, what else? So I'm going to say Nintendo something.
Yeah, but no, because Nintendo updates their game for each console.
Yeah, but like now they have the... Was it the store where you can get older games and play them on modern consoles? I'm going to say Pokemon?
Yes, but I don't...
Yeah, it's not really remastered, though, is it?
But you can play some of the original stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
That really counts.
I mean, things have actually been re-released. Yeah, they've had a re-release times, for that console.
Okami.
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Okami. I got Okami on PS2. I got Okami again on the PS3. I did not get Okami again on the PS4. But Okami was on PS2, 3, and 4. I know that for a fact.
Fair enough.
The other two that I could think of were Minecraft.
Okay, of course. Yeah, Minecraft, yeah.
And Resident Evil 4.
So 4 came out on what? The Xbox 360 era? PS3 era?
PS3.
And then it PS3 came. Did, it come, did 4 come out on the PS4? I'm not sure.
Resident Evil.
I don't think so. Maybe we were waiting for the remake.
PS3,
now.
PS4.
Okay. Really? All right.
All right. So
we're waiting for the remake on PS5 now.
So then Resident Evil, yeah. Okay. So we got what? Okami, Tetris, Resident Evil, and
Skyrim.
Milking us.
If you guys can think of any more, feel free. Make sure you comment or post and tell us things that we've missed out.
I'm sure there are plenty, like Minesweeper or something. I'm sure there are lots of puzzle games. I'm sure Candy Crush has probably come out multiple generations. That's Skyrim's a thing again. Yay! We're super happy about that, right? And that's the weirdest thing to me, though, is the internet is like, dang it, Todd Howard, you're making me buy it again. And I'm like, no. No, he's not making you buy it again. You're making it buy it. You're buying it again. And then Todd Howard even said, he said something along the lines of, I'll make you guys a promise. We'll stop re-releasing Skyrim when you stop buying it. So he's kind of like, it's your own fault, guys. We're making money off this cash cow. And if you stop buying it, we'll make something new. But as long as you guys keep paying for this same thing over and over and over again, we're just going to keep re-releasing it. And I was like, this guy's got it figured out. So, yeah. All right. But the other piece of news, you guys, again, can't see the card, but everybody else who's watching can. Fortnite is adding an imposter mode. And apparently the developers of Among Us are not too thrilled with this. So basically, and part of it is, I mean, we've had Mafia style games for a long time, right? The game Mafia itself is probably older than video games, I would assume, or at least a game, a Mafia style game, right? One person is trying to subvert the group and they're killing people at night, and then, you know, they're killing people when others can't see them, and then they have to figure out who is the killer. So this is a common thing. You know, this is not a new idea. And the people who made Among Us came right out and said, you know what? We'll admit that. We did not come up with this concept. But we did put our own spin on it. And our own spin on it was, you know, rather than just kind of the cycle of killer kill somebody, everybody votes as to who it is. Killer kill somebody, everyone votes to who it is. We're going to give the players tasks that they have to do to survive. And the killer is going to try to subvert those tasks. But if they can complete all these tasks and basically save their spaceship in time, then they win. And if the imposter is able to kill off enough of them, or they can not figure out who the imposter is, they lose. So they've added kind of their own spin on it. They had the whole, like, you know, emergency button, that sort of thing. And now, and their issue with Fortnite doing this is, A, Fortnite did not change any of the terminology. The evil person is called the imposter, the exact word that they used in Among Us. The, you know, the terminology like task, you know, they have tasks to do. They have, and the tasks are very similar to the tasks that they have to do in Among Us. And one of the Among Us developers even took one of the Among Us maps, took a couple of the rooms, flipped them over basically, and then showed the map of Fortnite. And they're like, look at how similar they are. And they're not exactly the same, but you can definitely tell that there's like, oh, there's a big room up here. And, you know, that, and there's corridors, you know. So he's like, if I took these two rooms, flip those, and then added a path between these two rooms, it's almost the same map. So it looks like they copied over. Basically, it looks like they pulled another PUBG where they just took somebody else's idea and recreated it in the Fortnite world, you know, with, so you can build stuff and crafting and all that. So, yeah, what are you guys thinking about that?
It will work.
Oh, it'll absolutely work. Do you think the Among Us people kind of have some grounds to stand on? Or do you think it's more of a, hey, course, you know what, guys, this is business and your idea wasn't
exactly that great? Exactly. This is business. So they must have a trademark on each and every one of their name. Just, you know, like the way they write it, the color or the color pattern, every single thing must have been legally, you know, like copyrighted. And if they didn't do that, they didn't do their job. I don't know. Maybe it has been an indie game and they don't have a lot of, you know, like lower power. I don't know. Lawyer. In any case, it was their job to secure their intellectual property. And if they didn't do that, shame on you. Sorry, you didn't. And they exploited the loophole, and they're going to make a lot of money with your ideas.
I'm not sure how much they would have in terms of, because I mean, the word imposter is, can you copyright that word? I mean, that's kind of like, I feel like that would be like Apple's attempt at copywriting. It's a rectangle with rounded corners, you know, like, you know, remember when Apple did that and they're like, you guys can't make this shape because it's got round corners. We copywrote the rectangle with rounded corners, you know. It's kind of a ubiquitous
shape. You copyrighted, you know, in a certain category of, like, they don't copyright it for the whole world. They copyright it for the gaming market, for gaming, just gaming, not for constructions or whatever, or board games or whatever, just for video games. And that's it. It's very specific.
What about the lawsuit a while ago? What was it? The Fine Bros, where they sued over the use of the term React video, the React videos. So these guys used to make all the videos like kids react to, or you know, seniors react to, teens react to. And did you ever see any of those videos? So they would have like kids react to, and then they would show them like something that we grew up with, and the kids would try to figure out what it was and how to use it.
Or they would really have cool concept.
Yeah. Or they would have like teens react to, and they would have teenagers looking at, say, like old memes, or you know, they would get them to play like really, really old games, you know, like Mario 64 or something in the original Mario 64 graphics, or, you know, like GoldenEye on an N64 with all the frame rate issues that it had. And they would kind of see like their reactions to it, like, oh my God, ah, you know, or, you know, seniors react to where they get old people to play newer video games or watch newer movies, like, you know, The Joker or something like that, that might have extreme violence, and see their reactions to it where they're like, oh my God, or they're like, that's insane, you know. So they did these videos, and it was always called, you know, kids react to, seniors react to, teens react to. And then people started doing reaction videos. And, you know, and it would say something like, blah, 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 reacts to the new Among Us patch or whatever. And then they made a lawsuit saying people can't use react to or reaction in their titles because we have a copyright on
it. Like that.
I know. So why would it? So why would Fortnite have a problem using the word imposter?
If they copyrighted imposter on a video game specific branch, I'm pretty sure you can do that.
But they did it with YouTube, a YouTube specific style.
Honestly, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't answer you there. I'm absolutely sure that you can protect your assets. This word here is an asset to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that because, for instance, I played Subnautica recently, and they made little poster of famous games, including Among Us, and they called it Alien Imposter or something like this, not to say Among Us. So if they can do that, I'm pretty sure Fortnite can.
Mm. Yeah,
so they must not have covered themselves up or something like this.
Yeah, I would say just like a single word like that, especially when that's literally the definition of the word. I would say it would be, you'd have a hard time arguing.
It has to have a context around it. You can't just push it very far. But
I really like,
really like, yeah.
There's a lot of board games like this. Battlestar Galactica is one of my favorite board games. Sabotage, Secret Hitler, all these type of things. So. Yeah, I like it. I saw that Polygon, I was reading a review, Polygon had said that they felt maybe it wasn't something that was meant to last, that it was the part of trying to make Fortnite into a social hub and a social community by providing different activities for them to get into, almost like Playroom.
Core games?
Yeah, where you can kind of like just connect to it, do something different, and they just release different ideas, so... Yeah, who knows whether it's supposed to meant to last forever rather than just get people back in and playing more with different, you know, slightly different versions of the game to play.
All right. Well, we're going to leave that there because we're running out of time. So we're going to leave you guys. Hopefully you enjoyed our show today. Make sure that you click subscribe, click the bell, notifications if you're on YouTube. If you are on Facebook, I guess it's still subscribe. I'm not as familiar with Facebook as I probably should be, but make sure that you sign up so that you can see us whenever we're fresh and new. All right. And with that, we're just going to say goodbye and we'll see you guys next week. Before we go real quick though, plans for streaming, Phil, as it comes, we'll see. Answer.
Yeah. No. I'm not going to be streaming as much. I am going to be streaming on Sunday. I've got the guys over. We're going to be doing our next mission of Sword and Sorcery. So we'll be live streaming that, and then I'll be releasing some videos for Warhammer: Chaos and Conquest this week. And maybe if I get time, I'll do a best of the last Sword and Sorcery game that we played.
All right, and Antoine, you?
I hope I can finish Spellcaster University in the next 2 weeks. Hopefully, because I thought it would be much shorter, but it seems like it's completely unending. So we'll see. I'll finish when I finish.
All right. And for me, I will be streaming the Ghost of Tsushima DLC, Iki Island. Hopefully, I will actually reach Iki Island. I need to get to the second part of Tsushima first to be able to do that. So I'm going to try to do that in my off time. And then once I reach the island, I will stop. And hopefully, I'll be able to stream that on Monday.
My missus says she wanted to see you play that online. She was disappointed that you haven't been doing any online. You've only been doing the storyline.
You mean the multiplayer?
Yep.
I do the multiplayer.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I haven't streamed it yet. But yeah, I play multiplayer.
Right. She was looking for streaming it, and she couldn't find any.
Oh, okay. No, well, maybe I'll do multiplayer then on Monday. If I don't reach Cheeky Island yet, I'll do multiplayer on Monday then. All right. And with that, we will see you all again later. So, bye-bye.
Toodles.
Yeah, bye-bye.